Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hey, welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and I'm joined by, with...
Chris Gaskin.
Joined by...
I don't...
With, yeah. Joined by Chris, with Chris.
We got it. Yeah.
It's Monday.
Yeah.
It's a holiday.
Yeah.
I hope you're having a good week so far. There's an interview with Vancouver's relationship fairy godmother, Tara Cafel, coming up in a few minutes. But we're just going to have a little chit-chat with Chris Gaskin, local funny man. Can I call you funny man?
Sure.
Or is that like a derogatory?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He's a comic.
Comedian. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope you are having a wonderful day. I am in the middle of my very first fast.
Me too. By that, I mean I haven't had breakfast. Yeah.
Well, you're doing intermittent fasting then.
Technically.
Yes.
Sure.
So if you want to hear more about that, I am looking at trying to get someone in for an interview about fasting who's a little more knowledgeable and experienced than I am. That was a request from a listener quite a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. And then I was sort of dabbling and looking at it, but I didn't have a personal relationship with fasting. So I wasn't super motivated to do it. But I do take your requests seriously. I swear I do. You can email me spiritualshow@gmail.com if you have suggestions and requests for the show. Speaking of interviews, yeah. Fred Penner.
Yeah.
The children's performer, he had the show. Your mom posted on Facebook about how you and your brother watched Fred Penner.
You stop right now.
I'm not going to say the rest. Aw, but it was a really cute story. Aw. Fred Penner, I'm going to be interviewing him. I'm not sure how long the interview is going to be and how, yeah. But I got the email about, do you want to interview Fred Penner? And I was like, heck yes, I do. He seems like a pretty cool guy. And I remember him from, we all remember him, right?
Of course.
What was his best song? I always remember the Raffi songs, though.
I don't know.
I get the two confused.
All I know was the television show that he had.
With the log.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He'd crawl through the log.
He's launching a new album for children, of course.
Okay, yeah.
And can you imagine if he did like some death metal album? That would be so funny.
Oh, man.
The new unplugged Fred
Penner. It'd be like Alanis Morissette all over again.
Yeah. He's going to be at the Vancouver Children's Festival coming up soon. I'm not exactly sure when that is, but it's happening soon. And he'll be there launching his new album. So I'll be talking with him. Yeah. I don't know. If you're there, maybe you'll be at work.
Probably, yeah. Okay. Go to vancouverschildrensfestival.com.
Don't give out the wrong email address or the wrong website.
URL.
URL?
Just Google it. Go to google.com and then type in Vancouver Children's Festival and all the information will be there.
There you go.
See? There.
Just use your fingers.
Yeah. I mean, I might as well be fasting after that hot chocolate that I had the other day.
Do you need to tell people?
I'm not going to say where it was, even though I should.
It was a cafe at a local Vancouver community center.
Dude, they had hot chocolate. So you were there.
This
doing
is supposed
something.
To be a show about love and happiness, and you're giving your consumer
complaints.
We're getting
complaints. Back to loving happiness just fine, but I want everyone to know that, and I should say where, but I'm not going to because, God, oh. So you were like, you could hang out for a bit, have hot chocolate, and I was like, absolutely, I'll have hot chocolate. And then they had like one straight up hot chocolate option, and then had mint hot chocolate, which I love mint hot chocolate. And they had caramel hot chocolate, which probably would have been the better option, given the fact that my mint hot chocolate was a mint tea bag and then hot chocolate mix. It was awful. And I was so mad.
Yes. When you told me about it, I was very disappointed for you, mm-hmm. especially because you'd waited so patiently for me to finish my exercise class.
Yep.
And yeah, I'm very
I was
sorry.
So that it's not your fault, but I was so upset.
So now you know.
I almost threw it back in their
if
faces.
If you really want to know where it is, maybe you can go to chrisgaskin.net.
Yeah,
and email him about it if you
or
really need to know where it is.
Listen to my podcast this week. I yelled about it on there.
There you go. Where it, at chrisgaskin.net is
yep,
the podcast.
Right at chrisgaskin.net.
There you
scroll
go. So
down. And you can
if you
play.
Need to know where not to get really bad. Mint hot chocolate.
Yep.
Then you can go and listen.
It was
to
mint tea hot chocolate. Those.
All right, no swearing though.
I'm not going to swear. Listen, I'm a professional. All right, I'm a gosh darn professional.
Gosh darn it. Yeah. Well, so if you, it's been what 61, 62 hours since I've eaten.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good though.
I'm proud of you. You haven't torn my face off quite yet, so.
Day is young.
That's true. And you usually don't need to not be eating
for
reason to do that.
This is the thing. Are you saying because you ask for it or
yeah.
because no?
Yeah, that's what it.
But that doesn't just because you are behaving in a way that would elicit a response of wanting to strangle or hit does not mean that it's appropriate for me to engage in that kind of behavior. I have to be responsible for my own behavior.
Oh, look who's growing up. Okay.
No matter what you do as I point at you. Wait, well, I just finished reading. My therapist recommended It Takes One to Tango.
Yes.
And what is the byline? Something about how she fixed her marriage without much help from her mm-hmm. husband. And it's really good. It's kind of along the lines of Stan Takin and 5-Minute Relationship Repair, but it's more of the part where we take care of our own emotions. We de-escalate our own emotions before we resolve or before we try to resolve things. Because one of the things that you and I do is we try to repair hurt feelings, but we'll
while
be right
still,
in the middle of the hurt feelings and then it's easy to escalate and then there are more hurt feelings and blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. So this is all about how one person can take responsibility for their behavior mm-hmm. and then they don't have to worry about what the other person's doing because it's not going to affect the choices that they make in their lives.
You lent me the book and I got to the part where it says, and you don't need your spouse to read the book. And I was like, well, she's read it already. So I just closed it and gave it back.
Well, I only asked you to read the first couple chapters unless you really enjoy it, just so that you get an idea.
No, I know.
I will contact her and see if she's available to be on the show, but we'll see. I guess we should go ahead and play some ads. Anyway, if you want to know more about the fasting, you can go to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/spiritualshow. Mm-hmm. And you can hear all about fasting and other craziness as well as the show episodes are there as well. So we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment as well as that interview with the relationship fairy godmother.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
One thing before we play that interview is this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the UBC campus. That's very important to mention.
You forgot.
I did.
Yeah.
That's okay. I didn't forget. I remembered now.
Yeah.
So that counts.
Yep. Absolutely.
Stop looking at me like that.
Yeah.
All right.
This is Synchronicity.
This is Synchronicity. I'm Marie Bernard. That's Chris Gaskin.
Yep.
If you want to hear about his rant about the tea, hot chocolate, you can go to chrisgaskin.net and listen to the podcast. So coming up in a moment is that interview with the relationship fairy godmother of Vancouver, Tara Cofell. And I just want to wish you, we would like to wish you a wonderful week. If you're in BC, it's a holiday today.
Yeah.
So I hope you're enjoying your holiday. But wherever in the world, in the cosmos, you are listening from, or whatever space and time on the time-space continuum, wherever you are on that, I hope you have a good whatever it is for you today.
What she said.
Good day.
Yeah. I say good day to you.
I say good day. Enjoy this show. Lots of love. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Today we are speaking with Tara Cofell. She is Vancouver's relationship fairy godmother. You can find her at TaraCofell.com. And today we're going to be talking all about a whole bunch of different topics related to love, intimacy, relationships, and something that Tara calls super couples. I'm really curious to know more about that. Welcome to the show, Tara.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you became a relationship coach and just sort of a bit about your journey.
Okay. I've been coaching since 2008. And so in that time, I've worked with a lot of individuals, but I kept finding myself drawn to the relationships that people have with, you know, things in their own lives, like food and sex and money, but also with their partners. And so I became really enthralled with that and started to attract more and more couples towards me. And so I picked up it's not certification, but I'm a leader for the Gottman Institute, who John Gottman is based in Washington. He's been studying couples for about 40 years, and he's pinpointed exactly what we can do to stay together and to make marriage work. And so I use that work a lot with my families, especially when they're welcoming new babies. I've just always been fascinated with how people relate to one another and how they communicate. Like, I fall asleep during battle scenes of movies because it's not about the relationship. So I'm always enthralled and interested in how people communicate and get on together.
Thanks, Tara. And on your website, TaraCofell.com, there's something about super couples and changing the world. So I really want to know more about that.
Ha. All right. I think that super couples can and will change the world. And this is how. So when we have an amazing relationship at home, when we have a place where we can land, that's soft, that we are seen and heard, where communication is paramount, paramount, where we work through what we need to, where we're growing and moving forward as individuals and as a couple, we actually create a beautiful nest for our little ones to grow up in and for everyone in our lives, like from coworkers to extended family to neighbors. Everyone gets modeled for them what this looks like. And, you know, we are going to grow up in a world, if we keep on this, right, if we keep communicating and being together in it, mess and all, we're going to live in a world where bad things don't happen as much, where, you know, where we don't terrorize each other, where we don't hurt each other, where we actually get to live in a world where we all get to grow. So that's why I do the work I do.
Thank you. And I'm curious, there's some mention of sort of polyamorous and open relationships on your website. And I'm wondering, because as far as I understand, the Gottman Institute teaches more about just within the couple unit. And so I'm wondering how that polyamorous thing factors into more of a secure relationship.
Well, it's a good question. I several years ago, I was adjacent to the community of people in consensual non-monogamy, and I started to coach some couples within that world. And it's recognizing that not every relationship looks the same. Every relationship can be designed to work for the people in it. John Gottman does talk a lot about monogamy and within that, you know, primary relationship. And certainly I coach a lot on that, but I do have couples who, you know, stretch outside that boundary and are a little bit exploratory in what they do together. And so I can support all of that. When we add more people to a relationship, we just need to really be mindful of how we're communicating, because it gets infinitely more complicated when we add more to the mix. So I can help people to be sort of strong in their center, and if they want to explore outwards, how to do that in a way that's actually going to serve them and work.
Thanks, Tara. So you're also working on your first book, all about grief and love and intimacy. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how that all unfolded.
Yes. In early 2015, I lost my ex-husband to suicide. We had split in 2010 and remained tremendous friends. He was one of my best friends in the whole world. We spent 14 years together before we parted ways. And so when I lost him, he was the second death of that year. I lost my last grandparent in March, and then my ex-husband died in May, and then I had a couple other losses that year. And by the end of December, I was twisting in the wind in grief, right? Just falling to my knees. I didn't know what else to do to heal. And I started writing. And I started writing about the gifts that I was finding in grief, the relationships I was forging, the learning how to surrender in such a sweet way to what was happening in my life, and all the people that wanted to help me and be part of my world. And I obviously would bring back any of those four men for even a moment again with them, but I wouldn't trade any of what I learned for all the money in the world. It was a tremendous experience, and I feel like it's deepened me as a coach and as a person in my relationships. So the book is about that journey. It's about some of the story of my ex-husband. His name was Brian, and what it was like to love him through to his death, and then what it was like to simmer in that afterwards and find those gifts and to trudge on into a brand new life that was without him completely. So yeah, the first draft is finished, and we're now farming it out, and I hope it will be published next spring, probably a year from now.
Beautiful. Tara, I'm curious, were you with your current partner now when your ex-husband passed?
No. I was single, and I met my current partner last January, and it was one of those interesting things where I think I had to go through the sea change of 2015 to land in the place, right, to be the partner that I am to my partner now. So yeah, we met in January, and it's been a bit of a whirlwind. It's kind of when you know, he's that person for me. He's lovely. Yeah.
Wonderful. So I can imagine being single and then losing your best friend in the world and having all these people pass away in such a short frame of a time frame. How were you coping with those things? Like, can you go through some of the strategies that kept you okay?
Yes. Well, a lot of it was that I didn't work. I was able to take a fair amount of time off. Clients would still find me somehow and say, you know, I want to be coaching. And that's ironically the time when I felt the most together was when I was with clients, but I certainly wasn't in a place to be marketing or anything like that. So I took a lot of rest time. I took a lot of retreats into the mountains. I would go to cabins and just sort of try and figure things out. I spent a lot of time with people that are important to me. I became really close again with my parents. I hadn't really been close to them as an adult, and now they live in a suite in my house, and they're close enough to squish every day if I want to. So yeah, I asked people in my life for what I needed, and that was to just be included and not asked to perform. And that meant that I got dragged along like my cousin Bernie in that movie, right? I would get propped up in the corner and someone would give me a glass of wine and I would just get to be there, but I didn't have to participate because I found it so exhausting to be on and to be social and to answer the questions and so on. So that was part of it. I just sort of went with the flow in some of it, right? Surrendered to what was happening and just let it be. I never resisted what was showing up for me. And that just meant that I cried sometimes. Sometimes it felt good to laugh and to do things that brought me joy. It didn't always have to be sad. I recognize that. And I think the most freeing statement was when somebody said to me, it's okay to not be okay here. The world has just fallen apart. It's okay to fall apart with it. And once I gave myself that permission, that's when I really started to heal and come out of it in a different way.
Hmm. Well, we are speaking right now with Tara Cafel. She is Vancouver's relationship fairy godmother. You can find her at TaraCafel.com. Now, Tara, you mentioned how you asked for what you needed from the people in your life. And one of the things that I've noticed with when someone goes through a major loss or trauma is that initially everyone kind of piles on the support and they're like, if you need anything, let me know. And they often leave it up to the grieving person to do the reaching out, which is very difficult. So I'm curious how you communicated what you needed and how you kind of developed that support around you.
Well, I think I was lucky that I had people who wouldn't give up on me, who didn't just exit. You're right. Like when we have a baby or someone dies, it is very front loaded that we get a lot of casseroles and best wishes and then it dies off very quickly. So I was lucky that I had people who were patient and included me as we went. I think from the other side of it, if we are supporting someone who is in grief, a really valuable piece is to just be there, to say, I know this is hard. I know this is hard and I'm here, right? I'm here. And then be there, right? Don't call upon them to ask always for what they need, but offer it. I'm going to the store. Can I get you anything? We're going to dinner. Would you like to come with us? You know, include the grieving person back in your life and give them the option to say yes or no, but make it clear that you're there and that you're not dismissing it after the fact.
So Tara, I don't know if this is in the realm of your experience or not, because you were so fortunate to have these people who didn't require you to be the one reaching out, but considering that we can only control our own behavior. And often this is not the case for most people, that people do, you know, often when people are grieving, it's quite easily for them to become socially isolated because a month after the event, everyone else has moved on and is over it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the grieving person is still grieving. So what things can that grieving person do to get the help of others without having to expend maybe more energy than they have?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. It can take a tremendous amount of effort. Like if I think of someone in a deep depression, anything with more than one step feels completely overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. Like even to mail a letter, you mean I have to find an envelope and a stamp and walk it to the mailbox? Forget it, right? Right. And so I think maybe just leaning into the automaticness of it, right? Like being with people nearby, like at work, for instance, we try and get on with life. We perhaps resume working. And so maybe it's about being near to people and seeing how that feels and making space for anything that's going to show up. Like you may cry at work. It may be really hard to be there. But having some of the things that we know that are tried and true in our lives, the routines of it. Like if we go to a gym and we've always gone to the same gym and we suddenly stop because we're in grief, well, what if we rejoin some of those routines just to rejoin some normalcy and create some routine in what we're doing that may help with some of the healing? And it puts you in contact with people where you can feel loved and accepted and held, right? The other place I think is social media, right? I love the connection of Facebook. I love that you can, you know, as much as it's evil sometimes to get stuck in social media and have that be the only way that you're communing with the world, it's also kind of a safe way to do it, that you can put a call out for help. I have a cousin who's a new mom, and when she had her daughter, she would go onto Facebook and say, "I'm struggling today. Who can help me? Who can come and watch my daughter for me? Who can come and hang out while I do housework?" Right? She asked in that realm, and people would send encouragement and would send articles for her. And so it's a way to have us connected without it being in your face and having to, you know, show up and be funny and put clothes on and makeup, right? Mm-hmm. we can just be there and enjoy it.
Absolutely. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about how grief affects people within the realm of relationships, since you are a relationship coach.
Yeah. Wow. Grief is so much more than just losing a human being from our lives. You know, if we, you know, lose a parent or a friend or someone dies. So there's that very obvious grief. But then there's the grief of, I call it the grief of middle age. And that hits from anywhere from 30 to 55. And it's where we start becoming aware of our own mortality. It's when we, you know, we may be looking at divorce or moving on from friendships or careers or, you know, putting our parents into a care home or knowing that we might have to one day. There's all of these things that cause grief. And it's going to show up in our partners in a number of ways. Like it may show up as anger. They may be frustrated. They may not know how to make a decision when they used to know. And sometimes it's something unresolved that we need to sort of make friends with. Like if we think of, if our spouse, for instance, is leaving a job that they've been at forever and moving into a new career, that looks all fine and dandy from the outside, but what if they need to grieve the position they just had and actually let that go, let that be as they jump into something new and exciting and fresh? So we can make space for them. We can actually give permission for them to, you know, talk about what will no longer be, right? What's going to change? The same as, you know, if we have a new mom who is stopping breastfeeding of her last baby. It can be tricky to support our partner in that because we don't understand, right? As far as we can see, baby's no longer tied to mom's breast and we can go out more often. It's easier to get a sitter. We get a bit of our life back. And that's all fine and dandy. But mom has to grieve that this is her last baby and this relationship is going to shift. And we need to let go of that in a way that's meaningful and honorable of that. Before we can move on. So grief is going to show up in a ton of ways in our relationships. We don't always recognize it in the moment. And then very specifically, you know, if someone has died, if we have lost, say my mother-in-law has passed away and I'm supporting my husband in that, oh, there's a lot to deal with, right? Like there's my own sadness that this woman I've known for a long time is now gone. And then I need to support my husband in his very profound grief, or maybe unanswered questions or unresolved conflicts he may have had with her, or dynamics within his family as they deal with the aftermath of it. There's a lot to make space for. And I would encourage my couples to just be patient with each other, to hold a tremendous amount of compassion for what's happening, to recognize that your spouse's behavior or reaction isn't about you. They are in a very different space, and it can be tricky to support them. And then at the same time, to take your own pain and put it to someone else. Your spouse actually doesn't have the capability to hold you in this moment because there's a lot, right? And so if we can complain outwards, if we can reach outwards for our support as we support inward, that's really important and more helpful. Yeah, those are kind of the main things, I think.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that brings up a lot of different questions, because that's the thing is, some of us, myself included, like I don't have family and things like that. So I get the majority of my emotional support from my romantic partner. So mm-hmm. when there is a loss or a grief or something like that going on, it can be challenging to, number one, know how to help him, because some people, sometimes it's men but not always, are not communicative about what they need, or maybe they don't even know what they need. So there's that whole challenge of, you know, I'm trying to be a support, but I don't really know what this person needs.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah, sometimes I've asked clients that, what do you need here? I don't even know. We don't even know where to begin, right? I think presence is going to reward us here. And it just means being there, right? And admitting, I don't know what to do here. I'm out of my range here. I don't know what to say. I can see that you're hurting. And I'm here. I'm here for whatever you need. Even if you don't know what that is, I'm here. It's something I actually work on with couples a lot, is to witness each other. That's a big part of it, right? We all, as human beings, want to know that we are heard and we are seen and that what we say matters. And so if we can do that for our partner, if we can witness what's happening, even to just go, honey, that sucks. That's so hard. I don't know what to say, but I'm here. Can I just hug you? Can I just be here, right? Just being present without the need to fix anything or to make it go away or to make it better. Just to be present. I think that's the best gift we can give each other.
Thank you for that, Tara. And so just to say it just like that, like I wish that I knew what to say, but yeah. I'm here for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Just admit we don't know. I've said that a lot of times when people have come, and I don't know, since writing this book, it feels like I attract people who have lost someone. And it's very fascinating to me. Even the man who's fixing my furnace said, I would have been here in the fall, but my wife was dying of cancer.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. I don't know you from Adam. And now we're going to have a conversation about this. So, just, yeah, seeing and hearing, and I say it all the time, I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. That looks really hard for you, right? And we've just, in that phrase, that person knows, okay, you see me, you see my pain, and you hear me. And that's so important, is to have ourselves and our lives be witnessed, even when it's hard.
So it sounds like one of the keys is really validating what you see. Like, I see that you're in pain.
Yeah. 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 And I think what we're missing, right, is this vulnerability, this, like, I think we made up somewhere along the way that when someone dies, we need to know what to say or what to do, or we need to make the pain go away. What if we just admitted that we don't know any of those things, and that we're just humans who are hurting, and we miss this person too, right? It's okay to just be in that messy, vulnerable, I don't know the answer place.
So it sounds like what we've been talking about, grief and relationships, we're speaking with Tara Cafel. You can find her at TaraCafel.com. She's Vancouver's relationship fairy godmother. And so we've been talking about how to support a partner when they are going through grief. So what kind of things can we maybe no longer or temporarily not expect from our partner, because there are agreements that partners have in relationship with regards to support and to daily chores and things like that. So how do you navigate that when someone's passed away?
Oh yeah, right. It's all bets are off and everything gets to change, and it's easy to get resentful and, oh wow, I suddenly have to do everything. Awesome, right? I think some of it is giving a wide berth and lowering the expectation, especially for, you know, the first few weeks anyway, or while we're making funeral arrangements, or, you know, getting on with the logistics of that, of a death. I think some of it can be gentle conversation around, you know, I know that you're hurting, or I know you're going through a lot right now. So I'm just so I know, what can I count on you for, right? Are you able to do this for me? Can I count on you for that? And it's okay if they say no, right? And we need to make room for something called grief brain, which I definitely found myself in. I would go to the store without a wallet and try and buy groceries, right? Or I would get out to the parking lot and have left my keys somewhere mysterious that I was yet to discover. This went on for months. When I was doing my taxes from that year early in 2016, I was looking through going, when was I in California? Like, I don't even remember these periods of time that blanked out. So know that that's going to happen. And if we need to call in more people to help, like if you've got childcare or things that need to be actually covered off, you know, this is when we call on aunts and uncles or neighbors or friends to help us carry some of the load, to take it off of our person so that they can actually just be with their grief. And at the same time, also, I think it helps to be called forward to carry on a little bit. To know that grief exists and walks with us like a piece of luggage we're going to carry with us. You know, we do need to resume life in some ways. We do need to go back to work. We need to, you know, carry on with the normalcy around us as much as we can. So there can be some gentle pulling forward to say, you know, please join us. Please join us back in our lives. And it's okay if it's really hard. We get it. These things are allowed to exist together, the joy and the pain and the grief and the life, all together at the same time.
Thank you. Again, we are speaking with Tara Cafel. She is Vancouver's relationship fairy godmother. You can find her at TaraCafel.com. And I'm wondering, Tara, where you would like to take this conversation next. What do you think is important to discuss?
Oh, wow. Wide open. This is so fun. I like talking about the dynamics of couples, actually, and how we can design together to be really, really powerful and the best versions of ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some of this is sort of assessing where we are as a snapshot. I think there's a download on my website somewhere, or might not be there anymore, but it's looking at, you know, different areas of your life. So, you know, work and career, money and finances, physical health, physical environment, friends and family, loved ones, those kind of categories. And then rating them on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, I can't imagine this being any better. And 1 or 0 being, this needs a lot of work. This is in the toilet. So it's assessing these things together and then seeing where you have maybe a mismatch. Or say we're doing really well financially, but we don't have a lot of leisure time, or we don't have a lot of fun. And so as a couple, we could actually design into that and go, okay, how do we want to feel more fun here? What do we want to do together that would feel really good? And maybe we take on a new hobby or decide to go backcountry camping with a 2-pound tent. Who knows, right? We can decide from there. But the point is to be a team at the team's success and at the individual's success within that team.
Sorry, you were going to say something else.
No, I completed my thought.
What comes to mind is, I mean, I love the idea of teams and couples working together to be so powerful. And then again, it keeps coming back for me to the fact that we can only control ourselves. So what about a person who's in a relationship where they're not feeling as much work from the other partner and they feel like they want to improve their relationship, they want to improve their life, but, you know, you can't force another person to do the work that it takes. So what do we do as individuals if we're in that kind of dynamic?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's, we can, you're right. We can only grow ourselves. We can't force someone to want to shift anything or to show up in a different way. I would say the only thing we can really do is focus on ourselves. And at being the best partner we can, at asking for what we would like in the relationship. We might not always get it, but we could ask. A lot of times our partner just wants us to be happy and wants us to have whatever we wish. So sometimes that can really be effective. And sometimes we do all the work and we model it and we embrace a new way of being, and the person we're with just never seems to move, and we make a decision. You know, is this relationship serving me? Does it need to shift? Or am I going to make a conscious decision to stay here, knowing that my partner doesn't match me where I am now? And that can be the tricky conversations, right? The tricky questions. I've had couples kind of come and say, you know, I'm choosing to be here and I notice that he's not showing up. He's not choosing me the way I'm choosing our relationship. And what do I do? And I go, well, you're choosing to stay there or you can choose to go. Mm-hmm. And we don't get to unconsciously just stay and be mad about it. We don't get to throw it in our partner's face. We don't get to complain all the time, because we're actually choosing to stay when we know it's maybe not serving us anymore. The best case scenario, of course, is that we, you know, say we want to take on a healthy lifestyle. We start running and we start, you know, eating really well and we feel really great. And our partner sees the amazing energy we have and the vitality around us and wants to join in, right? Sees the modeling and is inspired by it. So that's the ideal situation, but sometimes we have a mismatch there, that one person's growing and the other is not. So that's what I would say is model it, do it, grow it, and see what happens from there and what you're willing to be with or what shows up.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think when people make, I mean, you were married before, and I don't know the circumstances of why that ended, but I think when people make a lifetime commitment through marriage or whatever their agreement is, it can be really challenging when one person is growing and the other I mean, whether they're growing at a different pace or in a different way than the other partner would prefer, it can be difficult to leave something like that because there was that commitment in sickness and health, for better or worse, whether you're growing or not. So I don't know if marriage vows need to change, or what do we do to, if someone has been doing all the health things and all the working on the finances, and then the other person is just sort of doing their thing and fine to kind of come along for the ride, but they're not willing to invest in the same way. How do you deal with that?
Well, my husband and I did split for kind of around this reason. We were really great friends. We were always a good team, and we just started to really grow apart and wanted different things, and it wasn't matching anymore, and we were always okay until we just weren't, and we decided that it was time to go. I think it's terribly unoptimistic for me to say so, I think, but I don't necessarily believe that all marriages are meant to last forever. Of course, we like for them to be, right? We like to get married once and to have it last and to be that couple who is, you know, in their 70s and still loving on each other so much. It's not always a reality. We grow and change, and sometimes it doesn't fit anymore. But at the same time, I think we can choose to stay. I think we can choose each day the person we're with, understanding that they are human beings and they are not going to do everything we want them to. We're going to hold them in growing into their very best selves. And no, that might not happen, right? I speak with clients about passionate unattachment. And it's very passionately knowing what you want and knowing what you want for your partner and your relationship and your family, but being unattached to how or when that happens. So, like with Brian, we outgrew each other, I think. We moved in separate directions, and beautifully, in the next 5 years, he found this really soft, insightful place that I always wanted for him, but I had to let him go to get it, right? He came to this sort of seeking place where he wanted to know more and wanted to feel at peace. And I always wanted that for him, but like I said, I had to let go. And so I think, yeah, it's those two things. It's not necessarily something that's meant to last forever, ever. I think we come into each other's lives perhaps for a reason, and that maybe our time together is not meant to be that long. That's one side of it. And I think it is a choice about being conscious about what you're staying and what you're leaving and what you're giving your energy to. And holding each other in compassion and forgiveness. We can't make our partner wrong if they're not going to join us where we want to be.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk a little bit more about, just accepting whether you're, I mean, obviously if you need to leave, that's a different topic, but accepting the fact that our partner, no matter how much on board with what we want they are, it's never going to be exactly the picture we have in our mind. So how do we accept the differences while still moving forward together?
I think a big piece of it is recognizing that our partner is not here to meet our every single need. One example of this is I used to love, or I still do, watching movies with subtitles, foreign movies, you know, that are obscure and no one's ever heard of them. And I love that kind of thing. And like Brian hated that. He hated going to foreign movies. He would rather eat nails than go with me to a foreign movie, right? And so he would fight me on it, and he never wanted to come. And so I had in my pocket 3 or 4 friends who loved to do that with me, who would do that with me, right? Who would go to these things, and we would have a great time. You know, same with reading. My current partner is not a reader, and it kind of makes me a little uneasy. I've been reading since I could read. I think I woke up in my crib with books. And so I am a voracious collector of books. They feel like my babies. I touch them. I'm with them. I can't let go of them. And he is not that way. And so we don't have that in common. And I share that love with other people. And so I think we just need to realize that we are individuals and our partner does not have to meet every single one of our needs. And we're allowed to get that elsewhere. We're allowed to have friendships that fulfill us. We're allowed to love as many people as we wish. And it doesn't have to be in a romantic way. We're allowed to let people into our lives to augment what's happening and where we get our joy from. So that's a big part of it. And I think another piece of it would be curiosity for what our partner actually is really digging, right? Like hobbies or passions or, you know, things that they're interested in that we know nothing about. And at the same time, not buying in when we aren't interested. Like Bill, my partner, oh my goodness, he is a woodworker. So guess what we talk about all the time? Wood. Wood. And I'm not interested in wood. I like looking at some of the designs. I like looking at what he builds and designs and that kind of thing, but I can't pretend to be interested. And on the weekend, he went to this old car show and he said, oh, do you want to come? And I said, no, not even a little bit. I'll be at home. You go do that. And so, right, we give each other a lot of space for independence and then we find the place where we meet in the middle. And then there's some great stuff there, but his enjoyment is not hinged upon mine or vice versa. Mm. Yeah, I think that helps, perhaps.
Yeah, thank you, Tara. It's been, I have so many more questions, but we are running short on time. So we are speaking with Tara Cafel. She is Vancouver's relationship fairy godmother. You can find her website at taracafel.com. And I don't know if you want to keep going with this part of the conversation or if there's anything. We only have about 5 or 10 minutes left. So where would you like to go next?
I throw some questions at me.
Well, the question, so we can have different interests and the understanding that our partner is not going to, we can't expect our partner to meet all of our needs, and nor should we. And so how do we determine what need, I mean, for one person going together with his partner to the car show might be like a deep need, whereas for your partner, it might not be. So how do we decide what are the needs that are deal breakers and what are the needs that we just fulfill in other ways?
Oh, wow. Good question. Right. Because some things we do, we suck it up and we enjoy it. Because we know our partner loves it so much. Or, right, I always think of my mom who makes oysters for my dad and hates the way they smell and thinks they're disgusting, but makes them because he loves them, right? She doesn't refuse. She makes them, and it's a price of admission for loving him. I love how Dan Savage has coined that phrase, what's the price of admission for your partner, right? And it kind of speaks to what are we willing to sort of look the other way on or put up with or join in on because we love this person. It's great to have our limits and to say, I'm not doing that and I'm not going there. I would go to the car show if it were that important. I'm sure I could feign some interest and gleefully sit on the seat of a car. So I think some of it is really asking yourself, like, what am I really willing to do for this person who I love? Does it really cost me that much? Is it that much of an imposition for me to, you know, do what they really want me to do here? And then the other piece of it is communicating, right? Like, I think I asked Bill on the weekend when he was going to the car show, I said, is this mandatory? Do I need to go? Like, are you going to be mad if I don't go? And he said, no, it's fine. I'm going to go with my brother. Okay, great. I was off the hook. But if he'd said, it's really important to me and I really want you to come, or, you know, we haven't had a date night this week, so maybe we can spend some time together, that would have qualified it in a different way for me. I think communicating is always err on the side of over-communicating. Ask if it's important. And you know your partner well enough. Women tend to be, we'd be like, oh, no, it's fine. You don't have to come. It's fine, right? Well, we all know that that means you better come with me or I'm going to be mad. but just be honest about it, right? Or, and it's not necessarily about forcing someone to go to a foreign movie with you. It might be framing it as, I haven't seen you all week and I really want to spend some time with you. Or this film feels like it might actually be really interesting to you because it's about woodworking. Right? Like framing it in a different way so that it comes off as a little sweeter might make a difference.
I like it. Yeah, I do. I feel sometimes in my relationship, I mean, my partner is lovely and wonderful and wants me to be happy and he works so hard. And we're kind of at different, I'm a little bit older, so we're at different stages in our lives and I have more relationship experience. And so often I feel like I work so hard to communicate and then there's still miscommunications because he's not at that same level of communication. So these frustrations mm-hmm. come up and I don't know, but I can't control. I mean, it's not like he's a bad guy. He's not neglectful. It's just, he's different.
Yes. Yes. We, it's true. I've just started making light of it sometimes, right? That I'll have an entire conversation and think Bill was on board with what I was saying. And then the next day I realize he didn't listen to a word I said. Doesn't, in fact, even remember the conversation that we had where he nodded and said his own piece to it. So it's kind of our agreement that we decide it's funny, right? That I get to sort of rib him on it a little bit and fill him in on what he's missed, apparently. So it's part of navigating it together, right? You come up with your own language, you map it together, you come up with a way of carrying the relationship and sort of skimming over those cracks, right? And not making each other wrong. I think that's really a big key. Because it is just the way we are, right? It's how we communicate. We can ask for things to change a little bit differently. Like, oh, it actually makes me feel really important when you listen to me and pay attention to what I'm saying, right? That might cue a different thing in our partner to listen in a different way. Or maybe we just come up with a coping strategy. Like I've said to Bill, would it help if I made you a list? Would it help if I wrote that down for you so you don't forget? And so we have our own agreements and our own ways of coping and enabling each other to be successful. I think we get stuck in, you know, making our partner be wrong. Like, what if they forgot our birthday, right? We might be hell-bent on making them wrong all over the place for forgetting, instead of, you know, how can I help you be successful? Like, I feel kind of hurt that you forgot, but, you know, if you're willing to recover or if you're willing to make it up to me, let's make you be right. Let's see where we can be successful together.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the challenge is I get that I don't know. So then I have to figure it out. And then I have to tell him exactly what he needs to say or what he needs to do to make it right. Because it's just, I don't know. I don't know. Like, what can I do to help you? I don't know. So then I feel like, okay, well, I guess I'm on my own with this then.
I don't know. That's such a... I sometimes say to clients when they say, I don't know, I say, make something up. What would you say if you didn't know the answer? And they come up with something. It may be helpful with your partner to actually suggest, right? I think he's probably afraid of disappointing you further or making you angry or, you know, be shut down in some way. So you could always throw out, you know, kind of what you want to happen. And would it be helpful if this happened? Or how would it be if this happened? What do you think of that idea? And let him agree. Sometimes you got to drive sometimes.
All right. Well, if people are now, we have a global audience. So are you mostly working with people who live in Vancouver or do you do online stuff too?
Oh, far from it. I would say 98% of the coaching I do is all done online, either by Skype or Zoom or these other programs that these young people are coming up with. So in the comfort of our own homes, everyone can be in their pajamas. Sometimes clients come with a glass of wine to a session. It really is up to you. But I have clients kind of all over North America, and I had some in Turkey for a little while. So yeah, everywhere.
Wow, exciting. And so if someone is interested in learning more,